You're listening to Event CEO, a podcast for executives who are looking to maximize their event ROI through business strategy, technology, and innovation.
Hello and welcome to the Event CEO podcast. Thank you for listening and sharing part of your day with us. We are truly honored and grateful as we know your time is precious. I'm your host, Rebecca Linder, founder and CEO of Linder Global Events. And today, we're so pleased to have on the show Elliot Ferguson. Welcome, Elliot.
Thank you.
Elliot is president and CEO of Destination DC. So Elliot, why don't we just jump right in and tell us, what is Destination DC? It's probably the best place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you
for this opportunity, as we love working with you and all of your associates and everything you do in Washington and the U.S. The easiest way to describe who we are is that we're the economic development organization solely focused on the hospitality industry for Washington, D.C. Traditionally known as the Convention and Visitors Bureau, or DMO, Destination Marketing Organization today, we focus on bringing visitors domestically and internationally to Washington as a destination, as well as bringing conventions as small as 10 people and as large as 25,000 plus to the convention center or to individual hotels.
It's incredible.
Yes.
And we'll get into sort of the actual economic driver that you are in the city. It really is incredible. So talk to us about, what role do events play in your overall strategy as an organization?
Well, clearly for us, events play a huge role in how we focus on attracting our customers to events in which we're doing around the globe, and giving us an opportunity with a lot of our vendors to really promote our destination. We do lots of events that are associated with trade shows, specifically for the convention industry, but for the leisure market, it's a different sell. And the unique thing about the leisure market is that it's a different sell simply because you're dealing with different cultures and different countries, and you want to make sure you're hitting on the right cylinders to attract the right people.
But when you say industry events, you're also at South by Southwest. I mean, so those aren't really typically industry events.
True. And actually, Events DC, which is we call them our sister company, they're primarily focusing on South by Southwest because what they do is, not only are they the owner of the Convention Center, Carnegie Library, RFK Stadium, that stadium, and Stadium Armory, but they're responsible for bringing events to the city that we will in turn promote in a way of bringing more people to the city. So our role is more specific to promoting events that are happening in the city. Very rarely do we actually put on events of that caliber. The last time we did something of that nature was Taste of DC, which we were gladly willing to get out of, not because it wasn't a great event, but because we wanted to be able to promote events happening in the city more than actually put them on. The flip side of that is that we do many events that are customer-based, we do many events at trade shows, and you know, some of the most unique events we do globally simply because those customers are looking for a different type of experience.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Talk a little bit about IPW, which is one of the largest tourism events in the world, actually, and what will this event mean to D.C.? So a little bit about what it is and what it means to us as a city.
What does IPW stand for? I never heard of it.
Oh, okay.
Yes, good old IPW. U.S. Travel Association has put on a show for 40 plus years, formerly known as Powwow, for those that are familiar with that name, but changed the name about 5 years ago to IPW, which stands for nothing. And the benefit of Washington hosting IPW, which this will be our first time in the 40 plus year history, even though U.S. Travel Association is headquartered in Washington, this will be our opportunity to promote Washington to the global community, the travel agents, the travel writers, the media, during this show and convention that will be taking place in the city. And the benefit for us, the unique thing about Washington as a destination is that I call it the bubble effect, whereas people that live within the perimeter of Washington thinks that the world wants to come to Washington, and everyone knows us and they know us for all the wonderful things in which people that live here know. The reality is, the world knows us from the standpoint of what they see on TV. I call it the BBC, CNN effect. It's always politics associated with the name Washington, politics Washington, and it's not necessarily glamorous. So our goal, and what happens is, when we have travel writers that come here, travel agents that come to the city, they leave with a different feel for Washington as a city, and we'll talk about our brand later, DC Cool, because that's usually what happens. What did you think of Washington? It's cool. It's much more cool and more unique than I thought. So by hosting IPW, we're able to capture all those travel agents, all those that are really responsible for the international traveler coming to a destination, and wowing them with all the things in which we have to offer. U.S. Travel puts on events in the convention center and throughout the city. We play a huge role in the opening event, which we want to wow these folks with an event on the National Mall and the Air and Space Museum at the Smithsonian. We're also responsible for the closing event, which will be at Nats Park, and we're doing that with the state of Maryland and the state of Virginia. And in between, we always do our signature Washington, D.C. event prior to the show opening on Saturday, whereas we can really focus on welcoming those to the city. And then we're also doing an LGBT event for the first time on Monday with San Francisco, simply because a large component of who we attract would be the LGBT community. So the return on investment for us in hosting IPW is 1 million-plus visitors 3 years after hosting and a tremendous economic impact to the city.
Do we have any sense of what that impact is?
It's usually about $1.5 billion or more.
That's
the gift that keeps giving long-term, because, of course, when visitors come, they're going to talk about their experience and how unique Washington is. It's more than just a day trip, and how we should be one of the top destinations they visit when they're in the U.S.
Well, let's segue into D.C. Cool. Interestingly enough, I had breakfast at the Four Seasons yesterday with an international client, and on the menu is D.C. Cool.
Great.
And one of the items that I think has some kind of reminiscent of Ben's Chili Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, well, what is this? And I was very fortunate to be able to tell them what it was and who created that campaign.
Yeah.
But from an audience perspective, I think what's interesting about what you guys did there, and I'd love you to talk about it, is the fact that, you know, not only are you hosting events or bringing events here, but you're also trying to create an environment which is attractive to people. So you have to create a whole campaign and recast the city, essentially rebrand it.
Absolutely. And I'm glad to hear that you had that experience in the Willard, because we're a membership-based organization. We always encourage our members to take what we're doing in terms of branding the city and to incorporate it in how they're promoting their hotel, the restaurant, or whatever it is, because it's such a catchy phrase, DC
yeah.
Cool.
No, it's all over the menu at the Four Seasons.
Excellent. That makes me feel really good. We started DC Cool after the National Portrait Gallery had a exhibit that we knew that was coming called America Cool, whereas they looked at different portraits of Americans, be it in sports or politics and or whatever, and they had a unique exhibit that was coming to the Portrait Gallery that we looked at and said, how do we tie our next campaign into something that is profound for the city? And, you know, quite honestly, every time there's a group of travel writers or folks that are coming to the city, the team immediately wants me to be the first person to welcome them and say, hey, how great DC is. And I'm like, well, they just got off of a long flight, and now they're being forced to come to this event and drink, which, of course, they're loving to do. And then they're having to listen to me talk about how great Washington is. It's my job. People expect me to do it. So why don't we let them do things in the city, let them ride a bike around the city, let them go to some of the museums, let them do restaurants, sporting events, nightlife, all the things in which we have to offer, and then let me come in on the second or third day after everyone is relaxed, got to know each other, and have a great time. So the first thing that's usually asked is, you know, why should we bring business to Washington, D.C.? And if you've been here for a couple of days, I can turn that around and say, well, tell me what you thought of your experience. And they automatically say, you know, D.C. is much more cool than we thought. Gotcha. And so as we looked at the tagline and the experience and what we hear from visitors that are coming to the city, especially those in which we're inviting on familiarization tours, that name resonated more often than not. So it was a great opportunity for us to say, you know, one of the things I say to the team is that monuments, memorials, and museums are clearly a key reason to visit Washington. And we get it, and we know that that's great. But it doesn't always resonate in a sexy or glamorous way right. to those that are saying, hey, kids, do you want to go to Disney World or do you want to go to Washington, D.C.? We're probably not going to win a lot. But if you start focusing on all the other aspects and allow us to promote monuments, memorials, and museums, but all the other things and reasons why folks come to the city for nightlife, second largest number of theater seats outside of New York City, a great restaurant scene with its own Michelin guide now, great theater, great sporting events, retail, which continues to get better, great venues for meetings and events in the city, And that became our DC Cool campaign, and it continues to resonate 3.5 years later.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible campaign. And you really did make us look sexy, which is awesome.
It's good to know.
Yes, yes. So actually, let's talk about your organization, given the audience that we have listening. I mean, how would they use and activate an organization like you? I mean, how does a planner come in or a CEO who wants to host something in any city where there are like organizations, how do they use you? What benefit do you bring them?
Very, very good question. The most important thing is for those that are looking at doing business in Washington and or considering Washington and other cities is to know that our services are free of charge. You know, usually that's the, you know,
it's incredible.
It is incredible. And most convention bureaus or DMOs around the country, that's the case. You're not paying for the service. We like to think that we are the professionals and the authorities on everything that's happening in Washington, best places to hold your meetings. We basically have our finger on the pulse in terms of what's happening. And we've got 950 members, including your great organization, that are members so that they can receive leads and or know exactly what's happening. So if it's a convention or an event, sometimes they're synonymous. We'd like to make sure that the planner knows that they can call on us. And in most cases, because we have a strong convention sales team, you're usually assigned to someone already. So hopefully you're not calling us, we're already calling you. And being able to say, basically, we'd like for you to bring your meeting to Washington, D.C. in 2020 or whatever the year is. We will send out a lead to those hotels that we've qualified your needs. So if you're looking for a high-end experience and you're looking for 50 rooms, we'll send it to those hotels that meet that qualification. If it's a big citywide convention, we'll do the same thing. We'll put together a package that includes the convention center and availability and hotels, and we'll sell Washington as a package to that meeting planner as they're looking at other options. Now, once the convention is definite, which we hope that we're chosen, then it doesn't end there. You know, once you're coming to the city, then our goal is to make sure that we service that account, to make sure that they are not left on their own to find how to navigate through Washington. Some cases, we recommend them work with a destination management company that clearly will do everything from soup to nuts, which makes a lot of sense. And in other cases, they'll say, I'm looking for a place for our presidential dinner or to hold our big opening gala, and we'll send out leads to venues in the city to make sure that they're able to look at all the options that exist.
And do you guys aggregate that information when you get it and then share it, or are you just forwarding those proposals on to them directly?
It's all a la carte, depending on what the customer wants. Sometimes they say, hey, I don't want a whole bunch of emails or calls, or would you please have all that information and send it to me in a detailed listing, or would you ask folks to email me the information, please don't tell them to call me, or whatever works best. Or in some cases, they want it to remain anonymous, and you know, we don't want it published, so we're looking for space, especially corporate groups. They usually like to kind of sneak into a city, do their thing, and then leave.
It is an incredible benefit that, you know, is not unique to Washington, although I think you guys do it best, and I'll be honest, because we use those services around the country. And, you know, it's really done well here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
We thank you. So as you, and IP, kind of back to IPW, because this is sort of a unique platform for you guys, because you're actually producing events.
Yes.
In this realm, you know, you've also, you're a savvy guy, and you've been in the business a long time, and sponsorship has really changed over the years. And you guys, I know, in order to do this, are looking to gather sponsors for this. And,
yes.
And I will put a plug in and say that there's still opportunities to sponsor IPW, so if you'd like that, please get in there. But how is your sponsorship strategy? What is it and how has it changed, not only for IPW, but just in general?
Well, it changes based on the dynamics of change within the city and within the industry. IPW is unique and specific simply because, as I said earlier, we don't put on events or plan events for conventions. In this particular case, we are.
Right.
Because this is basically, as I said to the various directors of the Smithsonians in the city, this is our advertisement on Washington, D.C. And when U.S. Travel decides to take the show to a city, they basically give that city an opportunity to promote itself in a unique way. The goal of U.S. Travel is to, we're on a trade show floor at IPW, promoting Washington with our members and really focusing on ways in which we could bring more business to the city. Because the leisure market is so uniquely different than the convention market. And so we're very active at the show. The general sessions are robust and lively. Brand USA will sponsor it, and they'll have groups like Journey, or last year they had Gladys Knight and the Pips as their performance. New York will host another session whereas they will bring Broadway, different acts from Broadway to the show. But it's really U.S. Travel's event.
Okay.
The opportunity for us, because it's in Washington, D.C., is that, yes, it's their event, but we're going to make it unique and special. So the goal is to, one, have people really interested in coming to Washington for the IPW show, which there has been a lot of positive feedback in terms of Washington being chosen and folks coming here. And then we've got this phenomenal opportunity to showcase our city. They don't tell us where to do events, how to do events, but you know we've got a platform to promote this to an international audience, because all these folks are coming in from different locations. So we are looking, and we're focusing on those events. We're producing them with great organizations such as yours and others to make sure that the experience is spectacular. We've got one opportunity to do, well, we technically have more than one, but to do an opening and do it well on the National Mall, which everyone in the global community has seen on TV, the National Mall in some capacity, but to be there under the stars and to be able to really enjoy the entertainment and all the things we have in line, hopefully will be memorable in a positive way. And let's just face it, the global community loves baseball. You know, soccer or the real football, as they like to call it in other countries, is the primary sport of choice. But everyone loves baseball. So to have it in the baseball stadium and the things in which we have planned gives us a chance to close this out in a spectacular way, whereas they're leaving Washington saying, yes, we love the monuments. We love the fact that so many of the attractions are free. And we've got great things to see and do. But it's a more diverse destination than we ever thought it was.
How are you going to leverage all this in the, you know, and capture all this for the post period of this? I mean, give our audience a little bit of insight on best practices around that.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I literally said to my VP of Tourism, Teresa Bell Pulsey, it's like, you know, let's continue the momentum leading up to the first week of June, but let's make sure we don't run out of gas on June the 8th.
Right.
Yes, let's take a half a day off, jokingly. Let's take some time off to catch our breath. But then let's make sure we focus on the follow-up. And with that, you know, we've got organizations posted around the globe in countries like Brazil, Germany, the UK, Australia, and France. And they're focusing on making sure that the momentum continues post the event. So not only are they following up with those customers, because a lot of it is the training of the travel agents in those various countries. Unlike America, whereas we're prone to go to 10 different websites to get the best deal on a hotel room and an airline, they're still traveling with a travel agent.
Right.
And for us, the hardest thing for us to fathom is a travel agent in China promoting Washington or selling Washington in a way that they would sell it if they had visited here. So if they're not here, have never been here, but they're promoting Washington, how are they effectively doing a good job? Post IPW, coming here and experiencing it and sharing it with their colleagues in terms of not only was the show great, but Washington is phenomenal, then they're going to be able to say to that individual that says, I want to come to America, I want to spend 21 days there, I want to start on the East Coast, they're going to be able to speak as to all the great things they can do in Washington and the region. And so our goal is to continue that follow-up, get back on the road, go back and see some of those folks, get them to influence other people, and make sure the momentum continues.
And, you know, they'll do that because they've had the experience, and they'll have the narrative, and they'll have some of those. Will there be assets that you'll provide them? Are you going to do a post-reel, or what will happen in terms of the actual assets?
Yes, we're counting on the creative team that we have in-house to produce some unique things that will be able to showcase their experience in Washington and continue to remind them as to how cool Washington is, if I could use that phrase.
I think that's more than apt, since
yep.
we are so cool.
Yep.
And what about social media? How has that influenced, you know, your strategy, not only for IPW, but just in general?
Yeah, social media for us, it's probably by certain generations the least understood, but the most effective and probably one of the least expensive. So we're clearly focusing on social media. As a matter of fact, our marketing and communications department is probably the fastest growing department within the organization. And we're bringing on more people that are focusing on tweeting and sharing stories about Washington on social media. So there's a process and or a plan in place post IPW to be able to promote Washington using social media. And one of the coolest things that we did is something called hashtag MyDCCool. Whereas, you know, again, I always say to the team, it's kind of my job to go out and say how great Washington is. But when visitors come to the city, take pictures of our city and post them to our website, I'm sure it'll get a different reaction because these are not the folks that are responsible for promoting the city.
Right.
So it's actually been one of the most effective and most clicked on portions of our website with people that are interested in coming. So there's going to be an interaction with those that are attending IPW to continue that momentum with their peers, which we hope will resonate in a positive way.
Essentially, you're crowdsourcing sort of, you know, the content.
Exactly.
Which gives it more heft. How about, are you bringing any influencers in, though, that, you know, might not be in the tourism but still have a great impact on kind of the public in these various communities that you operate?
Yeah, mostly the media.
And okay.
I mean, and most of them, yeah, most of them are, they focus on the industry.
Traditional and digital?
Both, yes,
okay.
And global. So there's actually, in addition to the opening and closing and the other two events, there's an event in which we're doing at the museum. That is specific for the media, whereas we're going to wow them not only with one of the most spectacular museums in the city and in the country, but also give them a chance to expose them to Washington from the perspective that's important to them. And there'll be a lot of interviews that are done. In addition to the things in which I referenced there, you know, after the opening event, there are going to be night tours on open-top buses, whereas they're going to be able to really experience Washington at twilight, you know, during the evening hours, which I think is one of the most spectacular times to see the city, and Big Bus is supplying us with that opportunity. And we're going to continue to find ways pre the event, the convention, and post the convention with familiarization tours in Washington and the region, because we are teaming up with Maryland, State of Virginia, State of Maryland, and the Airports Authority to promote the region, which is also what we do from a global perspective.
And then from the outset of all of this, given that you've got sort of now this panoply of partners, essentially, you know, how do you determine ROI for something like this? What metrics are you setting at the front end of this in order to, and how do you measure throughout and recalibrate?
Yeah, a very good question, and it's really interesting because it's different for the leisure market than conventions. You know, for a convention, you can go to the planner and say how many people registered and mm-hmm. how many rooms were picked up. For the leisure market, I'd like to take responsibility for every visitor to the city coming because of us, but we know that's not the case. So we rely very heavily on our airlines.
Okay.
We rely on the Department of Commerce to determine what the percentage of increase from different countries is in terms of visitation to the U.S. and to Washington, D.C. We rely on some of the different travel agents that we work with in those countries, because then they're going to say, in 2016, we supplied 1,000 trips to Washington. In 2019,
okay.
that number increased to 2,500. So we rely on that data to really assist us in determining what the ROI is.
So take us overseas. So you do events all around the world.
Yep.
How do you actually, and I think this is relevant to our audience in terms of CEOs, I mean, how do you adjust for the protocols of each country? What do you do to prepare to go and both entertain and speak in those environments and communicate and collaborate, as well as then what adjustments do we have to make on this end in order to bring people and be hospitable in a way that they'll understand and appreciate?
Very good question. The thing for us is that you do have to recognize that one size does not fit all. You know, an example with China, we have a program in place that really assists us and our members in preparing for Chinese visitors coming to Washington, whereas they're actually getting somewhat certified, and we're communicating to those travel agents and those in which we work with in China that these are the hotels and restaurants and what have you that are prepared for Chinese visitors, be it knowing some of the cultural differences, you know, what should you have in place for breakfast, what are the expectations in terms of turndown, what are the expectations in terms of signage and all those variables. So we do that locally so that we can also promote it in China to those visitors that are coming.
And are you bringing those constituents locally together and really giving them basically a cultural lesson?
Absolutely.
And a protocol lesson?
Absolutely.
Are,
and we're
fantastic.
Bringing folks in from China and locally, government and other, you know, C-Trip comes to mind. C-Trip is one of the largest travel agencies in China. Was there 2 years ago, and they had about 25,000 employees. Was back there about 3 months ago, and they're up to 32,000 employees that solely focus on travel. The opportunity is so robust for us. There are 200 million people in China that travel internationally every year, but only 2 million of them come to the United States. So there's a great opportunity to increase that number. Okay. When we're in country, one of my favorite events we ever did, well, actually there's two. When you're, especially in the UK, you know, there is an expectation that we are going to be familiar with the culture, especially when you're in formal countries such as Asian countries. They're a little more forgiving to Westerners, but we do study and we have individuals that work on our team and the offices in those various countries that prepare us in advance for whatever it is we might be faced with. A good example, we were in China, flew into Shanghai the day that our now president called the leader of Taiwan. And so our communications department was on top of that, hey, this might happen, these questions might come up in terms of things simply because of the sensitivity of the politics, and we are engaged and prepared. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, but we do focus on those things if they are sensitive. When we're in European countries, they like coming to our events and they like having fun. So
it's important.
You know, and you want to hit their sweet spot. You want to build a relationship because at the end of the day, what we're doing is building relationships. So we've done, the most interesting thing we did was a karaoke event, whereas we had a live band and our folks in UK said, trust me, this is going to be a hit. I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem like a big hit because in Asia, they love karaoke.
Right.
And this was actually, yeah, this was kind of a, not lip syncing, you're singing the songs, but with a live band. And I'd never seen more people that were prepared. They studied, they practiced, and they were ready to go.
So no liquid courage necessary. Oh, this was
all for some. But and so I said to the team, okay, and I get in there. I'm not that guy that's standing there in a corner just like waving and saying, no, I'm not going to do this. I was the first one up.
Okay.
And I sang a song that I felt like the whole community would get involved with. I sang Hey Jude.
Did you get a few bars?
I will not. But, you know, I sang a Beatles song in the UK.
There you go.
So they were all in it and everybody was in it and it was a lot of fun. And we ended the event at 9 o'clock and at 12 midnight, we were still trying to tell people to go home. And the goal for us is, yes, it's a lot of fun and that's a large part of what we do, but we're building those relationships so that the next couple days when we're in their offices, the reaction is totally different when you're doing stuff like that with people and they really enjoy spending time with you. And the momentum for us, and to your point, the follow-up is to continue to engage them, get them to come here, and now all of a sudden you're working with friends, which is really what you want to do.
And that ties back to sort of how you talked about DC Cool and introducing DC. Give people a few days to kind of get to know, and then sort of get in there for the business transaction, and it sounds like the same thing you're doing as, you know, you're marketing overseas very successfully.
Exactly.
Oh, that's very, very brilliant. Listen, Elliot, I could talk to you all day long, so I'm going to invite you back. But my last question for you, and this is more of a personal one, where do you draw inspiration from and what do you task your 80-person organization personally to do to keep them, you know, really evolving as an organization and being the best?
You know, I evolve inspiration from some of the most unique places. It could be speaking to a group of school kids in terms of things in which they want to do, because then I start thinking about how I got into the industry, which, to your point, I can go on and on about that. I draw my inspiration from watching television and watching commercials and how people react to certain things. I think the key thing with our organization is that I remind the team, you know, let's never be stale. Let's not sit on our hands after we host IPW and say we did it, so let's wait for the fish to jump into the boat. That's where the work really begins. And I remind them that there's a difference between saying I'm never satisfied, which is not what I'm saying, versus, okay, we did this, it worked, what are we going to do differently? You know, DC Cool, this is our fourth year into it, and it's okay it's our fourth year, as long as we didn't do the same things in the fourth year as we did in the first year. So everything changed from black and white, which was how we started it, to different types of photography and a different feel. So that's the key thing for us, is, you know, never ever assume that because you're in a first-tier destination, selling a city that we like to think that people want to come to, that we should rest on our laurels. Always sell Washington as if you're selling the smallest town in America that no one has ever heard of. And it makes a big difference when you're really passionate about selling that destination and not assuming that because we are fortunate to have Congress meeting in the city, which is a huge draw, and we've got great infrastructure and we've got all these wonderful things, that that's enough.
Yeah, sage advice, and sage advice for the whole community that's listening, because frankly, you know, we all need to make sure we're on top of our game and drawing inspiration and always evolving in order to attract all our clients to ourselves or to the cities that we want them to come to. So,
exactly.
Elliot, Thank you for the inspiration and for the really valuable information. Greatly appreciate it. And we'll look forward to having you back.
It's certainly my pleasure. Thank you very much. And again, thanks for all that you do in the industry and the fact that you're so tied into Washington as a community. It means a lot.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure. And to all of you out in the ether, we wish you a great day and appreciate your time and attention. And we'll look forward to the next time.
You can follow Event CEO on Twitter and Instagram at @event_CEO and on Facebook at Event CEO Podcast. Show notes for this episode can be found at www.linderglobal.com/podcast.